Fail clicked her tongue in vexation. Dire news indeed, if true. And she could only hope Perlian and the others retained enough of their wits to at least pretend they had simply overheard talk by chance. Even so, she had to be sure, and quickly. Perrin might already have reached Massima. "What proof do you have, Perlian?"
"We talked to 3 farmers who saw a large flying creature land 4 nights ago, my lady. It brought a woman who was taken to Massima and remained with him for 3 hours."
"We were able to trace her all the way to where Massima stays in Abela," Lucille added.
"The 3 men all thought the creature was Shadow Spawn," Arala put in,
"but they seemed fairly reliable." For her to say any man not of Chuff Fail was fairly reliable was the same as anyone else saying they thought he was honest as a bell.
"I think I must ride into Abela," Fail said, gathering Swallow's reins. "Aleandra, take Magdon and Berylaine with you." Any other time, the tightening of Berylaine's lips over that would have been amusing. "Perlian, Arala, and Lucille will accompany me—" A man screamed, and everyone jerked. 50 paces away, one of Aleandra's green-coated soldiers was toppling from his saddle, and a moment later a winged guard fell with an arrow standing out from his throat. Aiel appeared among the trees, veiled and wielding bows as they ran. More soldiers fell. Bane and Chiad were on their feet, dark veils hiding their faces to the eyes. Their spears were thrust through the straps of the bow cases on their back, and they worked their bows smoothly, but they cast glances toward Fail, too. There were Aiel all around, hundreds, it seemed, a great noose closing in. Mounted soldiers lowered lances, pulling in their own circle around Fail and the others, but gaps appeared immediately as Aiel arrows struck home.
"Someone must get this news of Massima to Lord Perrin," Fail told Perlian and the 2 women. "One of you must reach him. Ride like fire." Her sweeping gaze took in Aleandra and Magdon, and Berylaine too. "All of you, ride like fire, or die here." Barely waiting for their nods, she suited actions to words and dug her heels into Swallow's flanks, bursting through the useless ring of soldiers. "Ride!" she shouted. Someone had to get the news to Perrin. "Ride!" Leaning low on Swallow's neck, she urged the black mare for speed. Fleet hooves splashed snow as Swallow ran, light as her namesake. For 100 strides, Fail thought she might break free, and then Swallow screamed and stumbled, pitching forward with the sharp snap of a breaking leg. Fail flew through air and struck hard, most of the breath driven out of her as she plunged face down into the snow. Fighting for air, she struggled to her feet and snatched a knife from her belt. Swallow had screamed before she stumbled, before that awful crack. A veiled Aiel man loomed up before her as if out of the air, chopping at her wrist with a stiffened hand. Her knife dropped from suddenly numb fingers, and before she could try to draw another with her left hand, the man was on her. She fought, kicking, punching, even biting, but the fellow was as wide as Perrin and a head taller. He seemed as hard as Perrin, too, for all the impression she made on him. She could have wept with frustration at the humiliating ease with which he handled her, first rooting out all of her knives and tucking them behind his belt, then using one of her own blades to cut her clothes away. Almost before she knew it, she was naked in the snow, her elbows bound together behind her back with one of her stockings, the other tied about her neck for a leash. She had no choice except to follow him, shivering and stumbling through the snow, her skin pebbled with the cold. Light! How had she ever thought this day anything less than icy? Light, if only someone had managed to escape with the news of Massima. To carry word of her capture to Perrin, of course, but she could escape somehow. The other was more important. The first body she saw was Perlian, sprawled on his back, with his sword in one outflung hand and blood all over his fine coat with the satin-striped sleeves. There were plenty of corpses after, winged guards in their red breastplates, Aleandra's soldiers in their dark green helmets, one of the hawkers, the hooded duck hawk flapping vainly against the jesses still gripped in the dead man's fist. She held on to hope, though. The first other prisoners she saw, kneeling among some Aiel, men and maidens with their veils hanging down their chests, were Bane and Chiad, each naked, unbound hands on her knees. Blood ran down across Bane's face and matted her flame-red hair. Chiad's left cheek was purple and swollen, and her gray eyes looked slightly glazed.
They knelt there, straight-backed, impassive and unashamed. But as the big Aiel man pushed her roughly to her knees beside them, they roused themselves.
"This is not right, Shido," Chiad mumbled angrily.
"She does not follow Je'ito," Bane barked. "You cannot make her guy shine."
"The guy shine will be quiet," a graying maiden said absently. Bane and Chiad gave Fael regretful looks, then settled back to their calm waiting. Huddling, trying to hide her nakedness against her knees, Fael did not know whether to weep or laugh. The two women she would have chosen to help her escape from anywhere, and neither would raise a hand to try because of Je'ito.
"I say again, Ephalen," the man who had captured her muttered. "This is foolishness. We traveled at a crawl in this snow."
He said the word awkwardly.
"There are too many armed men here. We should be moving east, not taking more Gaishine to slow us further."
"Savannah wants more Gaishine, Rolon," the graying maiden replied. She frowned, though, and her hard gray eyes seemed disapproving for a moment. Shivering, Fael blinked as the names sank in. Light, but the cold was making her wits slow. Savannah, Shido, they were in Kinslayer's Dagger, as far from here as was possible to be without crossing the spine of the world. Clearly they were not, though. That was something Perrin should know, another reason for her to escape soon. There seemed little chance of that, crouching there in the snow and wondering which bits of her were going to freeze first. The wheel was balancing her amusement over Berylaine's shivers with a vengeance. She was actually looking forward to the thick woolen robes that Gaishine wore. Her captors made no move to depart, though. There were other captives to be brought in. First was Megden, stripped bare and bound as Fael was, and struggling every step of the way, until the maiden who was pushing her along abruptly kicked her feet out from under her. Megden plunked down, sitting in the snow, and her eyes popped so wide that Fael might have laughed if she had not felt sorry for the woman. Alejandra came next, bent nearly double in an effort to shield herself, and then Arla, who seemed half-paralyzed by her nudity and was almost being dragged by a pair of maidens. Finally, another tall Aiel man appeared with a furiously kicking Lucille tucked under one arm like a package.
"The rest are dead or escaped," the man said, dropping the small Kyrianen woman beside Fael. "Savannah will have to be satisfied, Ephalen. She puts too much store in taking people who wear silk."
Fael did not struggle at all when she was prodded to her feet and set to laboring through the snow at the head of the other prisoners. She was too stunned to fight. Perleon dead, Arla and Lucille captive, and Alejandra and Megden. Light. Someone had to warn Perrin about Massima. Someone. It seemed a final blow. Here she was, shivering and gritting her teeth to keep them from chattering, trying her best to pretend that she was not stark naked and bound on her way to an uncertain captivity. All of that, and she had to hope that that slinking cat, that pouting trull, Berylaine, had managed to escape so she could reach Perrin. Alongside everything else, that seemed the worst of all. Egwene walked Daishar along the column of initiates, sisters on their horses among the wagons, accepted and novices afoot, despite the snow. The sun was bright in a sky with few clouds, but mist curled from her gelding's nostrils. Shiryamen Swan rode at her back, talking quietly about information learned from Swan's eyes and ears. Egwene had thought the fire-haired woman an efficient keeper once she learned that she was not the Amarlin, but day by day Shiryam seemed to grow ever more assiduous about her duties. Chesa followed on her tubby mare in case the Amarlin wanted anything, and unlike her, she was muttering again about Mary and Selaim both running away, the ungrateful wretches, leaving her to do the work of three. They rode slowly, and Egwene very carefully did not look toward the column. A month of recruiting, a month of the novice book being open to all, had brought in startling numbers, a flood anxious to become Aes Sedai, women of every age, some from hundreds of miles away. There were now twice as many novices with the column as before, almost 1,000. Most by far would never wear the shawl, yet the number of them had everyone staring. Some might cause minor problems, and one, a grandmother named Sharina with a potential above even that of Nynaeve,
certainly had everyone startled. But it was not the sight of a mother and daughter squabbling, because the daughter would be the stronger by far one day that she was trying to avoid, or noble women who were beginning to think they had made the wrong choice asking to be tested, or even Sherina's disturbingly direct looks. The gray-haired woman obeyed every rule and showed every proper respect, but she had run her large family by the sheer force of her presence, and even some of the sisters stepped warily around her. What Egwene did not want to see were the young women who had joined them 2 days before. The two sisters who brought them had been more than startled to find Egwene as Amyrlin, but their charges could not believe it. Not Egwene Alvear, the mayor's daughter from Emmons Field. She did not want to order anyone else punished, but she would have to if she saw another stick her tongue out at her. Gareth Bryn had his army in a wide column, too, cavalry and foot all arrayed and stretching out of sight through the trees. The pale sun glinted off breastplates and helmets and the points of pikes. Horses stamped their hooves in the snow impatiently. Bryn walked his sturdy bay to meet her before she reached the sitters waiting on their horses, in a large clearing ahead of both columns. He smiled at her through the face bars of his helmet. A reassuring smile, she thought.
"A fine morning for it, Mother," he said. "Here."
She only nodded, and he fell in behind her beside Swan, who did not immediately begin spitting at him. Egwene was not certain exactly what accommodation Swan had reached with the man, but she seldom grumbled about him any more in Egwene's hearing, and never when he was present. Egwene was glad he was there now. The Amyrlin seat could not let her general know she wanted his reassurance, but she felt the need of it this morning. The sitters had their horses in a line at the edge of the trees, and 13 more sisters sat their mounts a little way off, watching the sitters carefully. Romanda and Lilaine spurred their animals forward almost together, and Egwene could hardly help sighing as they approached, cloaks flaring behind them, hooves spraying snow as if at the charge. The hall obeyed her because it had no choice. In matters concerning the war against Elida, they did. But light, how they could quibble over what did or did not concern the war. When it did not, getting anything out of them was like pulling duck's teeth. Except for Sherina, they might have found a way to put a stop to accepting women of any age. Even Romanda was impressed by Sherina. The pair reined in before her, but before they could open their mouths, she spoke. "It's time we got on with it, daughters, and no time for wasting in idle chatter. Proceed." Romanda sniffed, though softly, and Lilaine looked as though she wanted to. They wheeled their horses as one, then glared at one another a moment. Events this past month had only heightened their dislike for each other. Lilaine tossed her head angrily in concession, and Romanda smiled, a faint curving of her lips. Egwene almost smiled, too. That mutual animosity was still her greatest strength in the hall. "The Amyrlin seat commands you to proceed," Romanda announced, raising one hand grandly. The light of Sidar sprang up around the 13 sisters near the sitters, around all of them together, and a thick slash of silver appeared in the middle of the clearing, rotating into a gateway 10 paces tall and 100 wide. Falling snow drifted through from the other side. Shouted orders rose among the soldiers, and the first armored heavy cavalry rode through. The swirling snow beyond the gateway was too thick to see far, yet Egwene imagined that she could make out the shining walls of Tar Valon and the White Tower itself.
"It has begun, Mother," Shiriam said, sounding almost surprised.
"It has begun," Egwene agreed. And the light willing, soon Elida would fall. She was supposed to wait until Bryn said sufficient of his soldiers were through, but she could not stop herself. Digging her heels into Dyshar's flanks, she rode through into the falling snow, onto the plain, where Dragon Mount reared black and smoking against a white sky.
Chapter 31. The Last Chapter. After. Winter winds and winter snows slowed the passage of trade across lands where they did not end it until spring. And for every 3 pigeons sent by merchants, 2 fell to hawks or weather. But where ice did not cover the rivers, ships still sailed, and rumor flew faster than lightnings. 1,000 rumors, each throwing off 1,000 seeds, that sprouted and grew in snow and ice as in fertile soil. At Tarvalin, some stories said, great armies had clashed, and the streets ran with blood, and Rebel Aes Sedai had stuck the head of Elida Arroyhan on a pike. No, Elida had closed her hand, and those who survived among the rebels groveled at Elida's feet. There had been no rebels, no division of the White Tower. It was the Black Tower that had been broken, by Aes Sedai designs and Aes Sedai power, and Ashaman hunted Ashaman across the nations. The White Tower had shattered the Sun Palace in Carrion, and the Dragon Reborn himself was bound now to the Amarlin Seat, her puppet and her tool. Some tales said Aes Sedai had been bound to him, bound to the Ashaman. Yet few believed that, and those few were ridiculed. Utter Hawkwing's armies had returned to reclaim his long-dead empire, and the Seanchan were sweeping all before them, even to driving the Dragon Reborn from Altara in defeat. The Seanchan had come to serve him. No, he had cast the Seanchan into the sea, destroying their army utterly. They had carried the Dragon Reborn away, to kneel before their empress. The Dragon Reborn was dead, and there was as much celebration as mourning, as many tears as cries of joy. Across the nations the stories spread like spiderweb laid upon spiderweb, and men and women planned the future, believing they knew the truth. They planned, and the pattern absorbed their plans, weaving toward the future foretold. The end of the eighth book of The Wheel of Time. This concludes the reading of The Path of Daggers by Robert Jordan. This book was read by Michael Kramer and Kate Redding.